The following is presented by Le Sommet Coors Light, celebrity guests, entertainment, and oh, a bit of sports. Every Wednesday night on RDS.
Melnick in the Afternoon with Mitch Melnick, TSN 690.
I don't know if this has happened since the playoffs started. We don't have a game to recap from last night. For Pierre McGuire at 5:05 on Melnick in the Afternoon, hour number 3 on TSN 690, along with Rod Francis, the voice of the Habs, Dan Robertson, in all week for the vacationing Mitch Gallo. We're with you until 7 o'clock. The Impact this week at 7 with Joey Alfieri, and then the Impact in Chicago with Rick Moffitt and Grant Needham as well. We're going to Nashville again.
Hockey insider Pierre McGuire, brought to you by Ye Olde Orchard Pub, with 6 locations in and around Montreal. YeOldOrchard.com.
Yeah, Dan, you got to turn your mic off occasionally.
No.
Oh, yeah?
How are you, Pierre?
I'm good, Mitch. How are you?
I'm good. We just chatted with Hal Gill down in Nashville, so I don't know how far you're separated from. Do you know where he lives down there?
No, but I'll catch up to him tomorrow for sure. I've seen him most trips that I've been down here.
Yeah. We were talking a lot, and I want to get to the red line because that's come up a couple of times over the last couple of days on Chris's show, Off the Cuff. Of Hal Gill is one of those guys, one of those rare guys who didn't have a lot of foot speed but was able to prolong his career after the last the other lockout, right? A lot of players couldn't – they just couldn't play. But Hal managed to hang in there, and he was an important part of some impressive teams, including the one that had the run 8 years ago right here in Montreal. What about the guys today? How, like, are they in danger here? The one-dimensional defensive defensemen who aren't swift?
Not if they're good athletes. I don't think Hal Gill would be immodest enough to tell you that he was not only a really good hockey player, he was a phenomenal football player and was a Division I player. A lot of people compared him to Drew Bledsoe when he played high school football in New England. So, you know, you're talking about a rare guy with size and amazing footwork. To be a quarterback at any level, you have to be able to move. You have to be able to digest information. You have to have great lateral mobility. You have to have great peripheral vision. And those are all parts of playing without the red line. So he was actually trained in another sport to be able to adapt to this. And, you know, there are not a lot of people like that. Darian Hatcher couldn't play in the league today. He was a one-dimensional defenseman. Scott Stevens could play in the league today if he was back in his prime. So everybody would be different. Everybody would be really different. Believe me, I would have Darian Hatcher on my team in a second if there was a red line. It's just a different game. It's totally different. So you'd have to be a bigger player. I'll give you an example. There's one in the league now. Zdeno Chara, 41. Do you know why he survives? Part of it is because he grew up in the prime of his career with the red line out. So that helped him a ton adjust, and he was still physically fit and capable of doing it. But I think if he had to start his career now, I think it would be tougher for him.
Well, you mentioned the red line, so let's segue here.
With no red line now, a setup breakout, a defenseman will stand behind his net. Both wingers on his team will post at the far blue line, and somehow, some way, we'll just hammer it up there where he can get a stick on it, and it goes behind the other team's net. So that's not building attack, and you don't need defensive systems to defend that.
That is Chris's old teammate with the Canadiens, Keith Acton, former longtime assistant coach, and yesterday on the show, the former GM of the Habs, Serge Savard.
What do you do to improve the game? It's the only way was to take off the red line, and I was poor. And the first time I introduced that, Harrison then said to me at that time, he said, "Serge, you have a Cadillac. Why you want to change it?" And a few years later, I asked him, "What happened? You changed the rule?" Well, he said, "I changed my mind." But right now, I'm not sure the hockey is better without the red line, and I really like to try the red line again.
All right, Pierre, that's a softball down the middle for you. How much is hockey better?
Okay, first of all, let's get to Keith Acton's point. I have so much respect for Keith. I watched him as a player and coached against him when he was playing. And I've talked to him ad nauseum over the years, especially when he was an assistant coach in the league. No red line offensive tactics can vary. Sometimes it's a stretch pass with the guys up high by the far blue line. It's a chip and chase game, so I call it chip, chase, and check hockey. Other times, it's a stretch pass through the middle of the ice, which is a one-touch to the winger, so it's more of a puck possession game, and you catch the defenseman standing flat-footed. There's so many different tactical things you can do with the red line out to expose people. It's not just a ping-pong game that a lot of older hockey people think it is. And if you watch Nashville play, somebody that understands no red line hockey, Peter Laviolette, because he played it growing up at Westfield State College in Massachusetts, you have a better idea. And that's why he was the first coach, by the way, to win the Stanley Cup with no red line in, because he understood those tactics better than anybody else. And you know who he coached against? Craig McTavish. Where did he play before he became an NHL player? College hockey at UMass Lowell. So this is nonsense, okay? And I'm just telling you straight up. When did you see, when the red line was in, teams that were down 3-0 coming from behind on the road and winning games?
So why
did you see that?
Well, so I didn't hear the whole conversation. What is Serge, as a longtime proponent of taking it out, why has he flipped like this? Any idea?
I don't know.
Yeah, okay. If Sean Campbell's listening, maybe he could let us know. But what would happen, in your opinion, if they put it back in?
You'd have a lot of 2-1 games, 3-2 games. You'd have a lot of power play penalty kill. You would see Johnny Gaudreau and a lot of the smaller players disappear. Anybody that you think is a smaller player that's a star player, they would go away. They would not exist anymore in the league. They'd be great in the American League, but they wouldn't be playing in the NHL.
And you see, I'd rather watch a sport, and you know how old school I am. We're very similar in that regard. I'd rather see a sport where more players could skate like Johnny Gaudreau than could skate like Brandon Prust, for example. No disrespect at all, but that's what we're talking about here, aren't we?
Yeah, but Brandon Prust, there's still a place for him in the game today. If you know, obviously he was dinged up and hurt, but
no, a player like him.
A player like him. But I'm just using, because I have fond admiration for him as a player and a person. I really do, and I really respected what he did, especially with the Rangers when he first went to Montreal. Brandon Prust, I watched him play for London Knights. I mean, he was a good player. He was a really, really important part of a Memorial Cup winning team. So, no, I mean, my big thing is that if you were to watch this is the argument that nobody can ever argue against, especially the analytics people who love numbers. In 2004, the Stanley Cup Final was between the Calgary Flames and the Tampa Bay Lightning. If you scored the first goal in the game, you never lost the game. There were never any lead changes in the series. It went 7 games. It was tackle football on ice. Why do you think they had to change? Nobody was watching. It was unwatchable. It was the dead puck era. I think it was Mike Farber that came up with that. Michael Farber couldn't have been more accurate. From 1995 to 2004, the league was dead. Go check the TV.
No, I have not so fond memories, believe me. I think we all do.
I stopped watching it. I couldn't stand it.
For sure. You had teams playing 3 defensemen out there, high Ron Wilson. You had
The Canadians did that too with Dave King and Zarly Zalapsky on Jágr.
True enough, several teams did, and you had a majority of the game being played in the neutral zone. That's not what we want, Pierre. We want players to skate through, get through the neutral zone. We want the game played in the offensive zone.
What was better than watching Evgeny Kuznetsov's breakaway through the Pittsburgh Penguin defense the other day? It would have been a borderline 2-line pass, by the way, in the old days. It would have been probably up for review. You don't think we have enough reviews now? Put the red line back in. People will want to review 2-line passes.
Actually, I'm glad you mentioned that goal, because you know what we like to do, Pierre, when we after a game, we play your on-ice interview to go out with, and I was looking for you with an Ovi after the game, and we couldn't find it, and then I realized why we couldn't find it, because Ovi dropped an F-bomb on you.
Yeah. Well, not on me. But
yeah, it wasn't to you. It wasn't personal. It was...
Well, yeah, because he was anxious and excited, and you know what was amazing about that? And I don't know if the camera picked it up, but I know it was run on national TV in the United States, but they bleated out the F-word. He was crying. I don't know if you saw his tears. He was
for those who didn't see it, it was Pierre asked him what he was thinking with Kuznetsov going in on the breakaway. He was just, please effing score.
And he's the one that made the play. He forced the turnover that eventually leads to the stretch pass that eventually leads to the breakaway that eventually leads to the goal. And during the interview, he cried. And, you know, you're talking, how easy is that for a proud man like that to stand there on camera and, you know, not be able to hold back your tears? I think that says a lot about him as a person in terms of how sincere he is in terms of wanting to win. But great deal of respect for him. Great deal of respect.
Hal Gill, again, about 45 minutes ago, in response to a question that Dan asked him about perhaps an under-the-radar guy or two for Nashville. And
to be under the radar, I think I'd have to go with what Nick Bonino does. He's a guy that really is a smart game all around. He knows the feel for the game. He makes the right plays at the right time. And I think he kind of brings the team together, and I think that might be what's different than last year. Obviously, him being with Pittsburgh, he knows how to win, and I think he's helped out a lot. I think he's done a great job.
Pierre, I could see you nodding.
Oh, I was. You can see. You are amazing. I was nodding. Pittsburgh missed two players. Actually, more than that, but they missed Bonino and Cullen tremendously. They missed Kunitz's leadership, and they missed Fleury's athletic ability and leadership ability. They missed those four in particular a significant amount. Nick was tremendous for Pittsburgh the 2 years they won the Cup. His body of work is unbelievable. I watched him for, you know, ever playing at Avon Old Farms and at Boston University. He's not the flashiest player. He's just under the radar, as Hal Gill correctly said. Fearless shot blocker, face-off winner, 5-on-5 point producer, 4-on-4 point producer if he has to do that, shut down star players, never complain to the coaches, just show up and work hard. He's an old pro. He's an old pro, and he's a good pro.
What's the atmosphere right now, Pierre, in Nashville? I mean, obviously tomorrow it's going to be off the charts, but 2 day or 1 day before that game, with a sort of an extra day between games, is it sort of the talk of everybody? Is everybody have their Predators jerseys on? Are there Jets fans around?
I when I landed at the airport, I saw some Predator sweaters. My driver that took me down to the hotel, he was asking me questions. When I got to the hotel, when I checked in, the man at the front desk was definitely asking me questions. Then I went to the gym, and nobody was there. And now I'm back in my room, so I'm going to go out after I'm done with you guys. I told Rod, once I'm done with you guys, I'm going to go out and check it out, see what's going on.
That could be dangerous.
Not anymore. I told
just
you yesterday.
Just going to check it out. Just going to check it out. Just one, bartender. Now. Just one. Just
no,
one.
My daughter, you know,
yeah, I know,
you know what?
I know.
I've been a very good patient. I'm telling you.
I know, but you
I'm
can
telling
get
you truthfully, I've been a very good patient.
Yeah.
You'd be surprised, because I was worried about my ability to be a good patient.
Yeah.
But I've been I haven't had a coffee since the surgery, which is crazy hard for me. I have not had one beer, not one, and that was on a 16-hour ride to Korea back and forth. Tried doing that without having a beer.
Dan?
And
I can't fly to Buffalo.
No. I've been a good patient.
All right, let's go down to North Carolina.
Bill and I couldn't be more different, and I think that's the key. And I think, and he was great, like I told you. I think we were coached as well and prepared as well as we could have been, but we are totally on opposite spectrums. I think in the NHL today, you see basically two types of coaches. You have the guys that played, and I'm one of those. I guess I'd be in that category. And, you know, and then you have the guys that didn't play, and they've worked as hard, if not harder, than the guy, you know, that played to study the craft and to be able to talk the craft and teach the craft. And I think I've kind of combined both worlds here. I feel like almost in an apprenticeship the last 4 years, looking at the game totally different.
One of the things I liked about him is he wanted it, but he didn't need the job. You know, we talked a lot about, you know, he's got a good life here. He's well respected. And, you know, the risk that he's taking with his reputation and his legacy is real. The fact that you have some of those stakes that are maybe different than someone else who would just show up here and could leave and still believes he can do it, knows he can do it, that made me feel good.
That's a new owner of the Hurricanes, Tom Dundon. And before that, Rod Brendamore, the new coach of the Carolina Hurricanes.
Well, Roddy's right on. He's right on. But Billy Peters played. I mean, he didn't play in the NHL, but he played at a real high level. That part was a little different to listen to. But no, Rod's right in a lot of things. It's been an apprenticeship for him. I think he studied really well. I think he'll do a good job. It depends on the players that you have. They're not an over. I told you this a million times. They're stacked in defense, but their forward position is virtually the same. And I can tell you right now, based on some phone calls that I've received from different teams in the league, they're going to start trading some players out of there based on calls I got when I got off the plane today. So it's going to be really interesting to see how this plays out with the management team that's there right now. I don't know how much Mr. Dundon's going to be involved in player decisions. Clearly, he's going to be involved in every decision based on some of the sound bites you hear as an owner. And, you know, I don't know what his knowledge of the league is. I don't. I've never met the man, so I couldn't tell you. Donnie Waddell has a checkered record in the NHL as a player personnel person.
So does Rick Dudley.
Rick Dudley's been at it for a long time, so you don't know. You don't know what's going to happen. I respect Rick for the amount of years he's put in and how hard he's worked, to use Rod Brindamore's term, at his craft, because Rick Dudley has worked hard at his craft. But I don't know how much ownership is going to be involved there, and I don't think anybody does. But I can tell you right now, based on phone calls I got when I was flying down here that I answered when I landed, there are going to be some players traded out of there. Based on, again, other teams calling for information, fact-finding on players. So that's going to be very, very interesting. Very interesting to see how this all plays out.
Something else that Dundon said today, that, quote, "I've come to the conclusion that strategy is pretty overrated. I don't believe the strategy differences are as important as getting the right culture and the right attitude."
Culture and attitude matter. They matter. Culture and attitude matter a ton. There's no question about that. But that comes down to, you build that over time. You've heard me talk to you for years about organizational standards. That starts with the types of people that you bring into work for you, how they dress when they go to work, how they're groomed when they go make presentations to free agents. I'll give you a case in point. Have you read some of the things about Brad Marchand from the Boston?
Well, I was going right there next.
Okay, well, we can wait and hold on to that then, and I'll just keep talking. But no, I mean, to me, yes, those are important. Standards are important and how you carry yourself as an organization, critically important. But you also need to know that not every player is going to be a Virgin Mary, and some of them are going to have to be really closely guarded and watched over, and you have to, as a coach, know those players. Especially if they're game breakers and guys that can help you win, because some of those guys can help you win and they're not exactly social citizens that you'd want to be hanging around with in normal situations. So you got to watch that. That's part of pro sports.
Brad Marchand with Jimmy Murphy in Boston today.
I don't need that anymore. And it's a different position, different player, different time in my career. And it's also a different game. It's a much different game now than back then. It was played a different way. It was coached and reffed a different way. And you're allowed to get away with different things. So you got to kind of adapt to the new game.
After he had also said, I have to cut that stuff out.
He does. Eddie Olczyk asked me about this on television the other day. How would I handle it? I did not expect the question. It was during the flow of the game. And I said, I would, as an ownership group and a management group, bring him aside and say, these are not part of the standards that we're about. And if you can't adhere to the standards that we have here, we're not having you around. It's that simple.
So he got that message.
If you can't get your point across that way with a player of that caliber, then you are not going to have much of what Mr. Dundon wants to create down in Carolina, and that is having an organization that is respected and revered and really looked up to, because players aren't going to want to eventually go there. That's just, if you don't have high standards, players will not want to go there.
Okay, Pierre, I have to ask this. How do you not step on Ed Olczyk's toes or whoever is in the booth doing color? How do you guys do that?
It's just been a lot of years of working together, voice inflections,
yeah,
knowing Doc's pattern of speech more than anything else, because he's the quarterback. And, you know, we kind of know what our strengths are. I see it more as a coach. Eddie, I think, sees it more as a player. So we kind of, there's certain situations he'll step into, and I'll give him his room, and there's certain situations I'll step into, and he'll give me my room.
No, that's interesting. I might be the only one.
I've thought about it, but it's just number one, it's talent, but there's also a chemistry. Yeah. And I how long you guys got to the point where, for example, I think a lot of people who maybe spend a little too much time thinking about the broadcast as opposed to the game, and that would be us because we're in the business, is how do you know when you ought to jump in after a goal is scored to analyze it, or allow Eddie to jump in?
Usually, not always, usually Eddie will get the first look. That's just how we plan it out. But there's sometimes when he may have missed something and he won't want to comment on it, and then they'll tell the truck on talkback, let Pierre take it. So I'll take it. Or there might be some time where the producer will say to me, hey, can you take this? I'll say, I don't really see it because I'm screened out. You know, the linesman was in the way, or there was a scramble and I couldn't see the far side of the net. So then Eddie will take it. So we have really quick communication. If you ever, I'd love to have you come in our truck so you could hear what actually goes on. But there's a lot of interplay that goes on between Eddie and I and the truck on talkbacks. And the other thing is all those packages that you see that I do, the replay packages, I'm building those during the game. I'm building those with our EVS operators at the back of the truck. Those are the real stars of our show. The guys and the ladies that work the EVS machines.
Aren't they amazing? Machines. Yeah. I my old job did that, and I have a really good friend, Steve McLean, who works on some broadcasts here in Montreal and nationally. But for you to be able to, that's the skill for a color commentator, an analyst. You have to watch the game and keep in mind what's going on, but talk to the replay ops at the same time to tell them what you want. So I guess it's an acquired skill, but you're right. What goes on in the truck during those games, it's really like nothing else.
Yeah, no, you know what, Dan? I give a lot of credit to Sam Flood, who had the confidence to do this. And he approached me at the 2004 Stanley Cup Final and said, if you think you can broadcast a game from between the benches, you're the guy I want. And I said, okay, I think I can do it, but I don't think the league will allow it. And he said, you leave that to Dick Ebersol and I. And they got it done, and we started, you know, after the lockout in the 2005-06 season, we started it. And it started out kind of helter-skelter, and then it just grew. First, the first part of it, when we did it, I'll remember this, Dan, I had to say to Sam, okay, I got a point on this. And then Sam would talk into Doc Emmerich and then John Davidson's ear back then and say, okay, Pierre will add. And then when there was a dead spot, then I would talk. But that's how we first started it. And then it started to flow a little bit better, and then we didn't have to do the Pierre will add stuff.